From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of March 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. Daryl Good will be here to talk about his latest article from the FarmDoc website. He and Scott Irwin took a look at what might happen with acreage and yield under good, fair, and really poor growing season conditions and what that might mean to the commodity markets. And today we'll hear from Amy Rochka. She says it's okay to go ahead and buy nutritious food that's good for you. It all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
On this Wednesday afternoon in Chicago, futures finished the day mixed. The nearby March contract in the soft red winter wheat pit at $7.76¾, up a penny. May futures 8.11¼, up one. July, though, down a penny for the soft red at $8.39¾ in the harvest month. March corn futures $7.14 from the corn pit, 13¼ lower. May at $7.21½, down 14, and July corn at $7.25¼, 13 cents lower. September futures $6.52½, down 2¼. December futures gained 0.75 cents to settle at $6.05½, but the March contract was down 1 at $6.14 for 2012. March beans at $13.87¼, up 19¾ cents today. The May futures at $13.94¼, up 19, and July $14.75¼, up 19¾ cents. August futures from the soybeans, $13.90¼, up 20¼. November beans at $13.45¾, 17½ higher. January futures up 16½ at $13.49¼. March bean meal at $3.59, up a buck. March bean oil at $58.27, up 1¼. Even. Live cattle futures, April contract, 112.20, 80 cents higher on the day. June futures at 114, 17½, 57½ higher. March feeder cattle at 129, 37½, up 47½. The April's at $131.40 per 100 pounds, 77½ cents higher. In the feeder cattle and the April lean hogs, $88.25, up 15 cents. The May futures were down 15 at 97.15. This is IPM. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The nearby crude oil futures are trading the April at $102.23. That's up $2.60 a barrel. Ethanol at $2.58.09, just about 0.6 cents lower. The April futures, though, were up 0.9 cents at $2.59.04. April natural gas at $3.81.07, 0.5 and 0.6 cents lower. The RBOB gasoline at $3.09, 3½ cents higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.04¢, up 2¢ today. Gold futures finished at $1,437.20 an ounce, up $6.50. The Dow at 12,093, just about 36 points higher on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for Urbana-Champaign as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. Skies should be sunny. We'll reach a high near 44 degrees. East-northeast winds at 10 to 13. They'll gust as high as 20 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear. A low of 24. East winds at about 10 miles an hour. And Thursday, partly sunny. A high near 47 degrees. Southeast winds between 9 and 13. Thursday night, a 40% chance of showers. Mostly cloudy, a low of 39 degrees, south winds between 7 and 9 miles an hour. By the time we get to the weekend, we'll have a 40% chance of showers on Friday. Cloudy, a high of 54, north-northwest winds at 5 to 9. And then Friday night, as that weekend really begins, rain likely, cloudy, a low of 38 degrees, chance of precip Friday night, 70%. Saturday, rain likely, cloudy, a high near 40, chance of precip at 60%. Saturday night, a chance of snow, mostly cloudy, a low of 24. Sunday, partly sunny, a high near 40 degrees. We'll take a complete look at what's happening in the world of agricultural weather when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Agricultural information on WILL is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, is on the phone line with us, as usual, to take a look at the futures. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd, and looking forward to seeing you over in Decatur at the Farm Progress Show meeting.
We'll be at the Farm Progress Show site really close anyway, just on, the south end of that site. I'd have to take a look for sure, but it's really near. It's the Macon County Extension Building. It's between the Farm Progress Show site and the Richland Community College. They're both and all right there together, and you can see ADM in the background, and apparently there's a great big wind turbine next to the building. So that starts at 7 o'clock tonight. We're going to go through crop insurance. You'll be there. Jackie Vakes will be there. Kurt Kimmel will be there. We'll answer all kinds of questions. Starts at 7 o'clock and free, open to everybody. Paul Merriman helped us put it together. He's with Extension in Macon County. Tells me that room will seat about 200, so don't worry about coming. I'd like to fill it up. I don't know whether we'll get that chance tonight, but we'll see how it goes. What do you think?
Well, I tell you, with a little bit of luck, I think we can have one of the first commodity meetings in the state of Illinois with live market quotes. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh.
We'll all be looking at the markets instead of talking about our quotes instead of talking about the market,
you
maybe.
You know what? I think you're right because we can show them up on the screen because they've got the access there. I should be able
just
to do
like
that.
Just like going to a drive-in movie theater there.
Well, hopefully they'll be going up and everybody will be very happy. What are you going to be able to tell them tonight, do you think?
Well, you know, this was one of the busiest days that old Paul's put in a long time. There was something in there for everyone today, and we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the psychology that we're seeing and some of the observations about the corn acreage, and this is, you know, monumental today because we did continue to see crude oil prices explode. And for those that don't like to put $4,000 and $5,000 up, it's a lot cheaper to buy a contract of corn. And we did see corn prices diverge a little bit with crude oil, and there has been a lot of long corn, short wheat on. Certain price objectives were reached, and we did have a very popular commodity service want to take profits at 741. So when corn didn't hold with a little higher opening from overnight, we did see some commodity funds selling corn. And there were rumors that there's some wheat business going on, not just a little, but some. And, of course, it's a drier weather forecast in that western one-third of the wheat country of Kansas and Colorado. And the wheat put in a real strong performance. And, of course, my theory is that the wink has been given to some of the big soy processors in China, and they've been buying soybeans in a big way. The Chinese will lift the soybean caps on profit margins, and they're buying beans before the Chinese officially lift that ban.
I want to come back to the corn market very quickly. I made note from a couple of the wire service reports and from the stats that we look at in the first place that overnight corn reached a 32-month high. It was a little bit on the overbought side. Do you make that as the accounting for the break in the nearby March contract?
Well, there was a little bit of that, but there's definitely a problem with harvest going to be coming on full throttle in South America. We've had 2 weeks in a row of pretty good exports in corn, and I think that unless we do see some strong buying from China, the corn market has kind of reached a plateau based on just strong ethanol and profit margins in that area. And I think the farmers, and there was definitely some cash movement at these higher price levels.
Well, indeed. When we hear Drew Lerner, or my discussion with him, of course, I recorded that a bit earlier today. He'll talk about really wet weather that might slow down
the Midwest,
harvest.
Yeah.
Well, not only in the Midwest, but in South America, that might slow down the harvest season there just a bit. So we'll talk to him and hear about that a bit later. But I suppose you want to talk about this corn market as a plateau. Do you think there's room for either the old or the new crop to come up more from where it is at that plateau?
Well, one thing that we all know in this kind of a political and economic situation, and I'm referring to the monumental strength in the crude oil market and the sugar market, it does make a producer very reluctant to be a big seller of corn. I think the government would like to have a big corn planted acreage, and I think they're going to try to encourage that every way they can. But at the present time, there's not a big incentive to be bearish corn when you have over $100 a barrel crude oil. And, you know, as Mr. Buffett got on the national television today, he said he'd just as soon have all the farmland in the United States as compared with all the gold in the world. And, of course, that makes a farmer kind of take notice, at least in central Illinois.
On that note, we'll let you go, and we'll see you tonight at 7 o'clock.
A tip of the hat, Todd.
Thank you so much. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. He will also be at the Macon County Extension Office just near the Farm Progress Show site in Richland Community College. That's Route 48 and I-72, and then you're looking for Bush College Road, I think it's called. But you know how to get to the Farm Progress Show site tonight at 7 o'clock. It's free, open to the public, and come and see us. We'll have our Ag Outlook meeting. We'll go through crop insurance, too, with our very own Farm Doc team member, Gary Schnittke. Listening to the Closing Market Report, it's a Wednesday afternoon. Up next, Amy Rochkis has a commentary from the Illinois Farm Bureau. She says it's okay to stretch your dollars and to eat healthy too.
Concern about the cost of a healthy diet being out of reach remains on the minds of many Americans as the nations continue to work through serious economic woes. However, according to an Agriculture Department study, the cost of eating healthy hasn't changed as much as some less healthy alternatives. Eating healthy food while on a budget does require strategic shopping. Farm Bureau's Food Checkout Week, February 20th through the 26th, focuses on helping Americans learn how to stretch their grocery dollars with healthy, nutritious food. America's farmers are committed to producing safe, healthy, and abundant food, and they share a common concern with consumers when it comes to putting nutritious meals on the table while sticking to a tight budget. The good news is that a recent USDA report favorably supports the economics of healthier eating. Recent food price data shows that prices for unprepared, readily available fresh fruits and vegetables have remained stable relative to dessert and snack foods such as chips, ice cream, and soda. Therefore, as defined by foods in the study, the price of a healthier diet has not changed compared to an unhealthy diet. Farm Bureau's Food Checkout Week is aimed at helping American consumers learn how to shop strategically to put nutritious meals on the table with fewer dollars. Learning to use your grocery dollars wisely helps ensure that nutrition isn't neglected. Fruits and vegetables, along with whole grains, low-fat dairy products, lean meats, fish, beans, eggs, and nuts, are an important part of a healthy diet. Buying fresh produce when it's in season and costs less, while buying frozen fruits and vegetables when they're not in season, is a smart way to stretch that dollar. Now in its 13th year, Food Checkout Week also highlights America's safe, abundant, and affordable food supply, made possible largely by America's productive farmers. According to the most recent information from the USDA's Economic Research Service, American families and individuals spend on average less than 10% of their disposable personal income for food. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station. today on the Farm Doc website at www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. Daryl Good and Scott Irwin, both ag economists from the University of Illinois, will post an article on corn acreage and yield. They did some predictions of what might happen under good yield, normal yield, and poor yield situations for the 2011 crop year. Daryl is here now to take up that article. Thanks, Mr. Good, for joining us in studio. Tell me what you did.
Well, Todd, we took a look at the current situation where we're expecting very tight year-ending stocks and the market discussion that now the size of the 2011 crop will be very important to the price of corn. So what we did, we outlined three different yield scenarios for 2011 and then followed those scenarios through a balance sheet and into a price projection under each of those three scenarios, just to underscore how important crop size is to next year's average price.
Tell me about the analysis.
We looked at, as I mentioned, three different scenarios. One, we calculated a trend yield based on actual U.S. yield since 1960. 158 bushels would be the trend yield for 2011. We applied that to an expected planted acres of 92 million, which again is speculation, but is kind of where the market is centering on its expectation about acreage response this year. And then we looked at the historic yields since 1960, converted those yields into 2011 equivalents, that is, adding the trend back into those actual yields, and then calculated the average yield for the 10 lowest yielding years we've had since 1960, and that calculates to be 147 bushels per acre in terms of 2011 technology. And then we looked at the 10 highest yielding years and calculated the average there, and that turned out to be 169 bushels in today's technology, and said, what if we have those three alternative yield scenarios, what does that imply for the balance sheet and the price of corn next year?
And the summary says?
Well, basically it says if we have a trend yield, we're not in any position to rebuild inventories next year. We would see year-ending stocks remaining at this 675 million bushel level and corn prices averaging relatively high in the upper $5 range, somewhere around $5.75 as a marketing year average price next year, compared to the expectation of $5.40 for the current year. Under the good weather scenario, which would be a big crop of over 14 billion bushels, that would suggest that we would have room to expand consumption and build our year-ending stocks to some extent back to about an 8 or 9% stocks-to-use ratio, and we think that would result in a season's average price slightly under $5 per bushel. We suggest $4.75 as next year's average price. And then under the poor weather scenario, you would see two things happening. One, consumption would have to be restricted considerably. We think most of that would happen in the livestock sector. And year-ending stocks would be reduced to an absolute minimum level. Again, we think about 5% of annual use, which would put that down to about 625 million bushels. And that combination of low stocks, restricting consumption under a scenario of high livestock prices, would suggest corn prices would average very high during the 2011-12 marketing year. And we've suggested somewhere around the $7 average price for the year, recognizing that at points and during the year, prices could be substantially higher.
It is important to note that trend yield in this case is different than trend yield from the United States Department of Agriculture.
Yes, folks tend to calculate trend yield differently using different time periods. Most people use a shorter time period than we do, and when they do that, they get a trend yield that's maybe three bushels higher than the 158 that we use. And I think under the low or poor weather and good weather, they would also have slightly higher yields because looking at a shorter time period. So the story would change a little bit, but the three scenarios would unfold very similarly to what we've outlined here.
Thanks, Daryl. That's Daryl Good, University of Illinois ag economist, talking about his latest article pinned and put on the FarmDoc website at farmdoc.illinois.edu.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Scott Butcher of the Andersons, that belongs in the Delphi area and the Climbers facility there, joins us now to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Scott. How are you today?
Great. And you, Todd?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Tell me about cash grain movement. Farmers been interested in the price of corn and soybeans, and do they have both to sell to you?
You know, they really have not here lately. We've seen things in the last week or so here. The market has been pretty volatile, up and down. We've kind of traded basically in the same range. We really haven't went anywhere one way or the other. So I think everybody is pretty well sold up, it feels like, on corn and soybeans both. They're content to, you know, maybe play the market out and see what happens for that last 15% to 20% or whatever they have left.
Usually with volatility, I suppose sometimes you might back off your basis. Has it remained strong or not?
Yeah, basis has remained somewhat strong, more so on the soybean side than the corn side. Corn basis is really, you know, it's decent right now, but, you know, it kind of depends on you know, how bad your needs are, I guess. Right now, the nearby needs are fairly good, but you get into those deferred months, and things are a lot more aggressive.
And what are your expectations over the next couple of weeks?
I think things are going to continue in that mode. I think that we see futures stay similar to where we are now until we get into planning and get some, you know, resolution on what kind of weather we're going to have and what kind of decisions yet to be made. So I don't think we move one way or the other a lot on futures. I think basis continues to climb as those demands, you know, continue to be unmet.
Is your ethanol plant still running full tilt?
We are not right now. The only reason we're in a scheduled shutdown here for a couple of days, but we, you know, other than that, we are running as much as we can.
I did make note that this morning's ethanol numbers were not as healthy as they have been. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, I think we are starting to see, you know, some plants, you know, idle back production a little bit. I don't necessarily know that there's a lot of that in this area. I think it's maybe more to the south. But I definitely think there are some plants that are not running at full production just because of margins.
Okay, because of margins, absolutely. And will they be able to come on, or will they just stay off until, well, prices go down?
Yeah, I think they're probably, you know, margins look like maybe in the future, you know, at least in the next month or two, maybe they're a little bit better. So you could see some of that come back. Obviously, a lot of it just depends on what the corn price does.
And your bids for the day?
Right now we are cash corn 708.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. That's Scott Butcher. He's with the Andersons Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's National Mulled Wine Day. Mulled simply means heated or spiced. The wine apparently dates back to the Roman Empire during the first century of the rule of Tiberius. The recipe from then still exists today, and it includes honey, pepper, saffron, and date pits. They have been soaked in wine to produce a soft mash. By medieval times, mulled wine was often preferred over water because it was thought to be more sanitary. By the 1500s, there were a number of methods for mulling wine, many involving honey and cinnamon. The biggest mulled wine punch bowl ever goes to British Admiral Edward Russell, who commanded a batch be made with 600 bottles of rum, 600 bottles of brandy, and several tons of boiling water. It was spiced with 200 pounds of nutmeg, 600 pounds of sugar, and the juice of 2,400 lemons. On this day in agricultural history in 1709, Andreas Sigmund Markgraf was born. A German chemist, in 1747, he extracted sugar from the sugar beet and determined it was identical to cane sugar. He used alcohol to extract the sugar, but his method did not lend itself to commercialization. It was not until 1802 that the first sugar beet refinery would be built. In 1797, the first patent for a washing machine was issued to Nathaniel Briggs. A fire destroyed the patent office, and no description of the device exists. And in 1879, Elmer McCullum was born. He was a chemist who discovered vitamins A, B, and D. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the closing market report. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City joins us now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Drew, thanks so much for being here. Tell me about the hot spots around the planet.
Well, we continue to watch the center south areas of Brazil. There's going to be some very heavy rain that will occur over the next 3 days in that region. This comes out of eastern portions of Mato Grosso do Sul into portions of Sao Paulo and southern Minas Gerais. Some of this area will likely see 2 to 6 inches of rainfall over the next 2 or 3 days, with some local amounts getting over 8 inches possibly. There will be some flooding. There definitely will be some delay in harvest activity. And as we move forward into the weekend, the heaviest rains will shift to the north. So a larger portion of Minas Gerais and Goiás will be involved with the heavier rains. So the bottom line is a little bit of a slower go in parts of Brazil. And because the ground is saturated in much of the region I described for the heaviest rains for the next 3 days, the flood potential is going to be fairly high, just because almost every drop of rain will likely run off into rivers and streams. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how all this comes together. Not everybody is going to get the exceptionally great amounts of rainfall, but there's certainly going to be quite a bit of moisture there. Outside of that, I think the rest of South America looks okay. One of the hot spots in North America continues to be the southwestern U.S. plains and some of the hard red wheat country, as well as parts of West Texas where sorghum, corn, and cotton are going to be planted soon. The dryness in that region is getting more and more of a concern. I think as we move forward through the next 10 days, there will not be a significant change in the overall situation there. But in days 11 through 15, which gets us out to beyond the 12th of this month, we may see a little better opportunity for some precipitation in some of that drought-stricken region. I certainly wouldn't get real excited about it at the moment. Confidence would be fairly low. Outside of that, we're still concerned about the flooding that's going on in parts of the Midwest. That's going to be with us off and on as we go through the next 2 weeks at least. And the upper portions of the Midwest and the Northern Plains have yet to really start melting that snow, and they're going to get a whole lot more up there before this month even gets halfway done. And that's going to continue to push that flood potential in those areas higher and higher.
Hey, Drew, have you done any longer-term outlook for the Midwest and what the spring might bring?
Absolutely. The heart of the Midwest is probably going to continue seeing this wetter bias for a while. That is something that's very typical of La Nina. Now, La Nina is going to weaken as we move into April, but we're still going to be stuck with the same general flow pattern. So frequent storms coming across the heart of the Midwest, probably going to keep us out of some of the fields for a while in early April. So a little bit of a slower start to planting. And, of course, the flooding because of melting snow in the upper Midwest will keep us out of the fields up there through a fairly large part of April. And then as we move forward in time, we'll probably run into some better conditions for field work as we go on into May and June. But we will have a very cold month here, so we're not going to see a great deal of warming occur across the Midwest, and that's going to kind of also work against us getting in the fields early in the season.
Drew, thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Hey, that's Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday, March 2nd edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget, tonight I'll be at the Macon County Extension Office. That's at the Farm Progress Show site, just to the west of it, right next to the wind turbine, and Richland Community College there in Decatur, Illinois, at 7 o'clock, along with Gary Schnitke and Jackie Vakes, Paul Cooley, and Kurt Kimmel to take up the commodity markets and crop insurance. Bring your questions. It's free. Starts at 7 o'clock tonight.